Hey guys, welcome to the Tetra Health and Performance Podcast. Today we're tackling like the essence of who we are. We are tackling group training and kind of the benefits of group training and how we structure it to get the best benefits we can out of it. So we'll explore all the nuances of group training.
Yeah, I think group training over the last maybe 5 to 10 years maybe has started picking up popularity. I know in America it was kind of as things are with training, quite often America picks up this kind of like culture, and then Australia and other countries sometimes follow. And I think with group training, that's one thing in particular that's definitely been picking up over the last few years. And we've seen the rise of so many gyms just off the back of group training. We've seen F45, which is now international, isn't it? It started off as an Australian company and made it around the world. I think there's some in London, I know America, and all around the world. So they've done that off the back of group training. There's different types of group training. There's this F45 kind of have a style where there's big numbers, like lots of people coming in. It's set up for that where they have like TVs on the wall and stuff like that. And then there's these kind of smaller, we call it small group training, where you'll see in just your kind of regular like 24-hour gyms where you'll have someone take 2 or 3 people or maybe 4 or 5 people for a session. The way that we do it in here, we think is a little bit different to the other places that do group training. We have kind of that middle kind of number, a number that we believe that we can control are about 12 people. And our training is more like a team setting. It looks more like a one-on-one session, more like how a sports team would train. And we have a few coaches to 12 people, maybe one coach sometimes, 2 coaches, 3 coaches to 12 people, it changes. But we program very differently. I find like one of the biggest issues with group training would be just trying to get numbers in, like getting as many people as possible. Because I think that's what's one of the coolest things about group training is how economical it is. It's how you can, like, where someone rather than have to pay a personal trainer, $70, $80, $100 for 45 minutes to an hour, they can now pay a smaller amount but train with 3-4 people at the same time. So it's better for the coach, they can make a little bit more money out of that one or two them hours, and it's better for the individual that they can pay a little bit less and maybe go see the coach a few more times in the day.
It's a win-win for all parties. I'll just go back into that rise of the group training. We're looking at some industry reports for like 2021 and 2022. Like, the bigger chain gyms are still making some growth but have slowed down massively, and the fastest mover has been your small niche gyms, your group training type facilities, and they've been booming up and been quite financially viable for the last like 5 years and projected going forward. So we've seen group training like go a fair bit forward in the last couple of years and still trajected to even climb further up. So it's cool to see people looking for, like, because what are you going to get with this sort of structure? You're going to get someone that owns a facility that probably has a higher knowledge base, that knows a little bit more about health and fitness. So you're going to get someone that's going to provide a higher quality of service to you with a smaller member cap as well. So there's less people to worry about. Like in a 24/7 gym, what, you got like 1,000, 2,000, 3,000, even some of these facilities hold up to 5,000 people. That's a lot of people to try and touch base and educate and help and know their wants and needs and desires. With these smaller facilities really booming up, the membership cap for these places are going to be somewhere like 100, 200, maybe 300 max, depending on the size of the space. But that's enough to know the individual, know their name, know their goals, know their targets, and know how to support them. So seeing these smaller niche gyms really grow and develop gives the ability for that owner, those coaches, to know their members and know how to support them. So why we're seeing so much more success is because we're getting more intimate relationships. We're learning how to educate better in a smaller population, and we can keep these individuals more accountable moving forward. So it's so great to see the growth and development of these lookalike gyms like ourselves as well, really kicking ass over the last couple of years.
Yeah, 100%. And you can see as well that they are getting good results as well, because they are getting such good growth in the industry. And as you're talking about those personal connections that you can form with those members, knowing what they want, knowing what they need, that ends up getting people better results as opposed to just getting those 5,000 people through an Anytime Fitness doing their own thing kind of thing. So you can see that growth is warranted in the industry.
I suppose a lot of it would come down to how many members per gym, for example, and then how many coaches and the amount of time spent that coaches have to spend on them individuals. So I've spoken to owners of 24-hour gyms who boast of thousands upon thousands, like something between 7,000 to 8,000 members. And then you'd think about the coaches that they have there, and you'd be like, how many coaches do you have? And it'd be still good numbers, but it'd be like, well, I have like 10, 12 coaches. And then them 10, 12 coaches, to reach out to them, 7,000 would be like, I don't know what, it'd be like one to nearly 1,000.
Yeah.
Which would be a nearly impossible task. But then you also have to look at the model that they arrange there, where that coach is working for himself. So he's not going to want to reach out to people that he's not personally training. And therefore, you're really not going to get that one coach reach out to 1,000 people. And these gyms, they do survive off that, right? They survive off the fact that they have 7,000 plus people paying a smaller weekly fee to not come in.
They don't want you there. That's how they make their money.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And coming into New Year's, it's interesting that like you go into the gym, a commercial gym, around this time of year, and everyone's complaining that now this is the time when these gyms have maybe 10% of their actual like their memberships coming in, and it's too busy for it anyway. So they're not actually really what they're supplying. It doesn't exist. Like it's actually it's like a false economy in a way, isn't it? It's like they're not actually wanting people to come into the gym. And once you have a business that runs like that, well, you're not going to get many people results.
Yeah, it's not really the right focus on what a gym should be.
And you'll see a lot of that in the structure in their membership as well. Like locking you into a 12-month contract. Like, I believe in a commitment period when you're trying to build a habit or something of that nature. But some of these contracts are, like, stronger than, like, rental agreements or bloody housing agreements. They're pretty, like, locked tight. And that's for the sake of you. They're relying on your short-term motivation and then not to support you, and then you just to turn into a weekly direct debit, right? And hopefully they just want you to sit there quietly paying your direct debit and not attending for X amount of time. So like a facility doesn't really check up on you, know what you want to do, build healthy support systems for you. That's hard, man, especially when you're trying to kickstart your health and fitness journey. You might need a bit of support. Most of us do whenever we're trying something new. You want to learn any new skill, finding someone that can help you out is the best place to go rather than going in blind.
And you can kind of look at our model in terms of that. As when we started, we were new to the industry as a group training gym, and we thought about these long-term contracts, and then we just realized that it's just not needed. If we can get people in the first month or two, and we can just, well, we want them in for a couple of months, so we kind of want to tie them in. We want them to look into slightly into the future. And if we can get them to just keep coming in, get a few sessions, then we can just keep them flowing like that. So we don't have to have this long-term contract to make money, because we actually survive off people training and getting results and then telling their friends.
That's why the smaller membership is it's a bit riskier, right? Because like you need these people to see benefit in what they're doing. So you're so invested in making sure that they get a positive experience that you're going to keep a higher retention rate. So the goal, like having 150, 200 members, isn't to turn and burn those members, like have new members in 6 months' time. You want to retain those for as long as you can and make sure they're all getting a positive benefit and they see reason to stay with you. And that's very contrasted against, like, say, a 24/7 gym, where it's about having as many people as possible and isn't really so much about retention. It's just to make sure the numbers are there. So up there at Facebook or adverts up whenever they start to drop, and they just sign them back on for another 12 months and they sustain. With a smaller model, and like I hope we see with our business and other businesses like us, it's really trying to about keep these members as long as you can. And you can only do that if they're happy, if they're getting results, they're enjoying the journey and they're having fun.
Something, I'm a little bit off point, but hopefully we can draw the line with this. It's the kind of, in America, you have Walmart and Costco. Mm-hmm. And what happens is with Walmart and Costco, Walmart are actually doing extremely well and Costco not so well, for the reason that Walmart look after their staff and they don't actually have to pay anywhere near the same amount of money on actual their retention of their staff. So they look after their staff just a little bit better. Their staff, like, they get results, right? They get results in their lives. They can buy things. They feel like they have better Medicare. They have dental. And therefore, they keep coming back and they keep coming to work. They're positive when they come to work and they keep working. But then on the other side, you have kind of Costco where they pay them less and people quit more often. And actually, the business makes so much less money from paying them less because they have a worse retention model. So what they have to do is they have to keep burning, keep bringing new people in, then new people leave and so on. And the gym is the exact same environment. We want people to come in. And the saddest thing about training is the retention is the most important thing. That the more the members get in over a longer period of time, the more results they're going to get. That's like the number one rule of training. Just be consistent, show up. And the only way that can happen is if you have people continuously coming in for longer periods of time, staying with you and not just burning through new members and trying to get new members in continuously. And the cool thing about that, it's like kind of win-win, is that then what people start doing is they start building relationships. Well, you can't have members build relationships if half of your membership is always changing. They're like, oh, where's Tom? Where's he gone? Where's this guy gone? Where's this guy gone? I just got on with him. Like, it takes a while to build a relationship. So the cool thing is if the same people are coming over and over again, they're building better relationships and much more likely to want to go to the gym to see that person.
Huge point there. That's just culture and community and all those sorts of things that you want to coincide with building your healthy habit. You know you've got to invest in yourself, but if you want to catch up with someone and have a chin wag, it's just that easier to make sure you get your butt there and you stay accountable to the actions. I want to go on one quick one. That's right. That's popped up because you're talking about like different models there, James. And this is like even reflected in staffing, like four times. So like at a 24/7 gym, all staff pretty much I know from the big chain gyms are subcontractors, so they're not actually employees. So they'll pay a weekly fee to the gym to then get clients and work their own little business within there. And unfortunately, what that does from a cultural standpoint is you've got a bunch of people that are working for themselves or trying to get their own leads to grow themselves and look after themselves or their families. So a lot of the time, the culture isn't the greatest because they've got, I don't know, 5, 6, 8, 10 personal trainers in there all competing against each other. And that isn't always the healthiest position for coaches to be working in because they're all kind of fighting against each other to get those extra leads, to pay their rent, to pay their whatever it happens to be. And that's why we're a big believer with our facility here that I don't ever want to do one of those rental models. Having someone as like a permanent part-time, all that sort of stuff, having a contract where they know they're going to get paid hourly, they don't have to worry about that stuff. And then you can commit yourself to being in the moment, not worrying about, I need this client over there here because I need to pay my rent or whatever it happens to be. You're guaranteed to be paid. You just got to perform and do a decent job and you're going to get your pay regardless. I think that's a nicer place for the mindset to be for the coach. Because the coach can be fully present in the moment and be working on building relationships and doing the best they can, not worrying about that extra couple of dollars they need for their income. So that's, I think, a decent point for cultural differences in those big chains versus your smaller places with better employment contracts.
Yeah, it definitely makes your approach a lot more client-based as opposed to a bit more selfish, as you were saying, in those 24/7 gyms.
So I've been there. That was myself, like, in the place. You try to be the best person you can, but you are like, I got things to pay, I got bills to do, I need to work on my clients. And sometimes your strategies can be a bit short-term orientated rather than long-term. So it's been in that situation before many years ago and not something I'd want to replicate for the industry. And I probably don't agree with it whatsoever in the industry.
That's a really good point as well. And so when we're looking at that, we're looking at kind of that model of having staff who actually aren't in it for anyone but their own members. And we're just not paying attention to the total population of a gym. But in, for example, our benchmark, what we can do is we have a very small amount of memberships and we kind of know our capacity. So at a certain capacity, we can kind of be like, oh, we have to go on a wait list, which we're kind of at that kind of point at this moment in time. We're just trying to put more sessions in so we can get everyone in as often as possible, which is kind of like the perfect case to be in at this moment in time. And as we do lose members, we'll pick up members slowly, but then they get kind of reintroduced. And I think our retention for an average member must be nearly a year.
Yeah, it's a decent lifespan.
And the cool thing in a year of training, you can get so many results. You can really change your body in a year. And it's sadly is the other things that you see with these group training gyms is they're always advertising the kind of the point of 30-day challenges. And the reason we kind of don't advertise many 30-day challenges or try to stay away from this as often as possible because it just breeds that exact same thing. Get in, get out, and not get much results from it.
There's a lot in the industry, isn't there? There's a lot of things that you wish would get streamlined and cleaned up a little bit. Again, all that we've talked about, it's a lot of the time, and I see this in replicating life everywhere. Just anything that's in that short, compacted, like have-it-now mentality is most likely destined to be very short-term and short-lived and not be a sustainable habit that we can build on and live with. Oh, here we go. Here's my point I want to bring up. Sorry, quickly. I just remembered something. So one of the best things about having 12 people and having someone for about 12 months is they get to learn how you move and what the expectations with movement quality are. And the best thing about having 12 is when we have one or two new members, you've got another 10 people that know what to move. So someone coming in new, you can give them all the attention they need because those other 10 are pretty up to speed and know what's happening. And they need just a little bit less attention, still, you know, what they need. You can dedicate so much of your time as a coach to that new person coming in and then getting them up to speed. So that retention rate is huge for success and just that fluidity in a daily session.
Yeah, and on that point as well, sometimes you even have members who have been here for so long. If you are dealing with a fair amount of new members as well, those old members I've seen helping out the new members as well. So they're almost coaching in their own sense. So obviously, you as a coach are going to get there at some point. But if they're stuck and don't know what the exercise is or what they're really doing, I've seen members that have been here for a longer time actually helping them out. And that's a really great community that you have there and really trustworthy experiences together.
It's definitely like a quality recipe. And I feel like we kind of hit it on like that kind of Goldilocks point here. It's like where you have some gyms doing just trying to fit way too many people in. And then you have other gyms that maybe just like not giving enough attention to them, just like them two, three people. And where we kind of have that 12 people environment in here, it really allows like a bunch of individuals. And with that, like, most importantly, I think, is that you're going to have to set the environment for that. So if you have 12 members, some of the biggest issues I see in group training gyms is the equipment. Like, they haven't designed a gym to have the equipment that you need for them individuals. And this looks in many different ways. This looks like, say, for example, we're trying to develop, it's a nice easy one, we're trying to develop strength. Then we need enough weight for each individual to actually challenge their strength. And I see it in all different ways. It's like F45 is a big one for that, where you see that they've all got different stations with different weight, but they're saying it's strength training. Well, what we need to do to make it so it is actually strength training is we need to have the program in the background, and that program needs to escalate in intensity. And we need to have the weights for that individual to be able to have the same weight or more each week to progress that. And so often do we see gyms that kind of just like they've got this kind of scattered around amount of equipment, and it's just not utilizable for someone to actually improve strength as a quality. And that can be to the point of like just using wrong pieces of equipment for some exercises. Like, and it's not so much that it's wrong, but it's just not the most efficient way to do something. I see often like them kind of like pump bars being used for deadlifts and stuff like that, where you have to actually reach really, really low to the ground. I see like kettlebells for overhead pressing. And whereas these are exercises, I just wouldn't be considering them the best way to improve strength for an exercise, because you do want a certain amount of efficiency with the movement, and certain pieces of equipment do just tie in better for certain exercises. It's kind of like the point is you've got the task that you want to do, and then you're trying to fit it around the environment rather than we can actually make the environment fit the task.
And that's like you said, James, that's that premeditated, like, when you're doing the blueprint of your gym, how many bikes do we need? How many cable systems do we need? How heavy, how many dumbbells and how heavy should they be? And this is all in that planning stage. You've got to think, all right, so what's my capacity of how many members per session? How can I divide this up, or how can I split this up so it's a superset here, a circuit over here? Everyone has enough equipment for a main movement. So it's all that planning stage beforehand, which makes the sessions and the methods and the training styles we want to use in the gym or more diverse, and we have more tools in our toolbox to make sure the members are getting the best training they can. And you can look at like another two modalities that have a lot of constraints, like Les Mills style training. You're talking about those pump bars, and it's just heavy, lightweight with heavy repetition. Again, there's no progressive overload, and you're kind of stuck to a bar and some dumbbells. You're missing a lot of equipment you could use for other stimuluses. Another one would be like park training. Park training is like generally very aerobic fit, again, lacking a lot of weight to try and load themselves against for better progressive overload. So there are group training, love it, and we're obviously massive advocates of it, but there are other modalities out there that still are limiting themselves to having more diverse options to play with to get the best out of their members and for them to have the best experience possible.
And I think an interesting conversation to have is, what are they saying they're getting for you? So say, for example, if I go to a Les Mills session, well, I'm expecting some cardio, aerobic cardio. But then if they are saying that they're really developing strength qualities, well, where are you as an individual? So as a starter, yes, like, you're going to go to Les Mills and you're probably going to get strong. You're probably get strong for a while, right? You're probably get strong for a couple of months. And in F45, right, I might build some muscle in the first initial, because I'm starting from a low base, like a low muscle mass. My fitness isn't that much. I'm not that strong. So these gyms can be amazing. They can be amazing for the first month, 2 months, maybe even 3 months. They can be amazing for beginners. But all like, what then happens is, what about your retention model? Like, what happens after 3 months? And so often we have people come to us and say, oh, I did that and it really worked for 3 months. But then for the next 3 months, nothing changed. And the idea is that they don't have they might have the tool to start you off. And I'd be wary of what they say they are doing, And then I'd be understanding of where you are. And I'd be like, well, that's actually might be the perfect introduction to exercise for myself. Right, but where am I going to go from there? Because if I want and I believe truly that once you start exercising in whatever way, you want to kind of keep it competitive for the rest of your life. Because if it gets if it loses its bit of competitiveness, you don't see yourself improving, then you might get a little bit stale. So I'd be looking at like, what can this do for me? And it might be better as an introduction. And I think things like F45 are good as introductions. Les Mills, really good for introductory. But then I think that if you want to keep developing past the few months stage, then I'd be looking for something a little bit more progressive.
Yeah.
And I think that's the natural kind of path that most people take with training, right? Get into something and then they get a little bit more serious about it, a little bit more, they enjoy a little bit more, but they just want to keep seeing progress. Because eventually, if you don't see progress, you're going to get bored.
Yeah, because that is something you need to see that progress to be motivated as well. But in terms of that starting off at like an F45 or something, even if that's just for habit building, it is a good way of saying, hey, this is my schedule, this is where I'm going to fit it in during the day. And regardless of the content of what you're doing in this session itself, the first couple, 3 months, that is the hardest time to motivate yourself to get into the gym. So it is good for building those habits. But as you're talking about, you need something that is going to progressively overload you after that.
And it's such a shame that, because that has no intimidation. Well, I think minimal intimidation about it, which is a great barrier of entry, right? There's not much to be nervous or scared about stepping into one of those sessions. It's sad that like seeing some heavier dumbbells around a facility or something of that nature does have that little bit greater barrier of entry going, oh God, I'm a bit nervous about this. And that's why it's just great to just hopefully reassure people that there's nothing to be nervous about. We can load this up slowly. It can be very safely done under the right context. Anyway, what pat on the back again to those facilities for being a nice starting point. What I want to kind of touch base into is a little bit like kind of how our ideas first started with Benchmark itself and kind of seeing, well, how do athletes train and what is their structure and how do they get such great results? Well, number one, they're in a team setting. You talk like NFL, AFL, NRL, whatever it happens to be, you're surrounded by a bunch of like-minded individuals training for a common purpose. There's that camaraderie and there's staff on board to guide you in the direction you're to go to. One of the most important things when you're in this environment is trying to keep these players healthy. They've got to move well and they've got to feel well so they can stay on the field. When someone's worth a ridiculous amount of dollars per season, well, number one is they've got to be feeling good and they can get on the field every day. So thinking these type of models and structures, we want to replicate this in Benchmark. How can we have that team or that strength conditioning orientated structure and bring that to what we call general populations, just everyday people? You know, weekend warriors like to play a bit of sport on the weekend to your mum of two kids just wants to lose a bit of body fat. Like how do we bring that structure over here? And that was such a fun idea to slowly deconstruct and then rebuild to turn it into what it is today, a Benchmark.
And I think one of the biggest things that we do differently is not just the programming as a whole over the course of months, but the programming in an individual session and how we break it up. It's kind of like you're going to do the warm-up with the coach. The coach is going to run you through the warm-up and then he's going to stop everything and he's going to explain the program to you for our first and second exercise. And then again, we're going to have these little breaks up throughout the training to just stop and speak and explain to everyone what's going to happen. We do that all the way to the end. And we like a typical program, if you've ever done one before, might have a main movement at the beginning. It might have a secondary main movement. It might have like a superset, and then it might have a circuit at the end. And I think that like circuits are extremely useful to get lots of work done, but not always the most useful thing to be. Not always the most useful thing to be at the beginning of a session. And I think that's where it gets kind of like butchered with group training. It's just like, well, what's the most easy way to train people to get the most people in, to use all our equipment, and it's just to throw everyone at a circuit every single day. And the sad thing about circuits is like if I am trying to build some strength again or I'm trying to get certain stimuluses, then I'm fatigued from all these other exercises to get enough stimulus from a certain exercise. So again, it always becomes like that kind of aerobic training. And we've just discussed this previously, and we've discussed how what really makes us different here as well is that we run through things a little bit slower. Not everything is just like work for 30 seconds, rest for 30 seconds. We might do like 12 reps and then we stop and we say, hey, well, we're working pretty hard at the moment. Let's give you 2 minutes recovery. So you're actually well recovered to go again. And I think like lots of gyms and lots of trainers are, especially when they start, are extremely scared of that kind of silence. Mm. You know, like they're scared of recovery time in a session because it's kind of like they're not working, they're not sweating, they're bored. But you get over that over time. Like you don't have to be a coach that's always filling the air with noise, and you don't have to be a coach that's always filling, like making sure everyone is continuously moving. they're actually going to get a lot more quite often from these changes of recovery times and actually slowing them down, stopping, and then going again. And I think we've learned that as well. Like, especially when you're in an outdoor environment, you feel like you have to like shout at everyone, keep everyone moving all the time. And most good things come from the rest in between the set.
Yeah. Just on that point too, you're a coach, not a cheerleader. So like it's great time in those lulls to like to talk about the movement, talk about intent, to talk about any other health question queries that individual might have. So you don't always have to be going, go harder, you can do it. That's what a cheerleader does, right? So you're there to give feedback. Like, yes, there is time to pat on the back, but you're there to talk about the movement, talk about their health and fitness, talk about how they can improve as an individual. So that's like that's a perfect time to build relationships and to tell them what they need to do to get to execute a little bit better.
Yeah, and that can be that couple of minutes can be, like Mitch just said, can be super well utilized for all them reasons. And I just planning out how they're going to do their next set. Like just thinking about, oh, what weight did you just use? Oh, I used 20 kilos. And how did it feel? Well, I could only get 5. And we'll be like, oh, well, we're trying to work for 8 to 10 at the moment. So maybe we should drop that weight down. And just kind of like you're using your knowledge of training. Most of the time it's a very simple problem. But you're using your knowledge to kind of be like, well, that's not always search for that maximal heavy weight. Or that's not just search for that pump of being completely burned out. That's hold one rep in the tank. That's and what you're doing is you're able to go around and actually say to each individual members and get them to start thinking about the process of how they can get the best results in each session. And it's kind of like, that's kind of like captivating on every single second of training, right?
Yeah. Like you don't always have to just be paying attention to the members that are lifting the weights. You can go around, you can ask them, hey, how did your last set go? How did it feel? How many reps in reserve did you have? How much percentage of intensity was it? Like that is a good conversation that you can have so that you can actually adjust that next set for them and ensure that they get getting the best out of what they're doing. Especially in like our recent program, we were doing different weights at different sets, searching for different reps in reserve. Like some new clients aren't going to know this kind of thing. So those are the ones you go up to while they're resting, especially if it's a minute and a half to 2 minutes of rest. You can have a good conversation with that member and make sure they're using the right weights.
I think what you just said, Callan, is so incredible because the idea is that quite often we think of the coach as just the guy who's watching the movement. And we're thinking about the coach who's watching the movement. He's telling you to do this like this when you while you're doing it, like while you're doing the exercise. And we even know that outside of the exercise in that rest between is pretty where people are more open to feedback on their movement. Plus, we can talk about all these other things that are very, very important to the individual. But it's not the perception of the coach. And sadly, I think lots of coaches get caught up in what their perception is supposed to be rather than actually like the good you can do outside of that.
100%. There's a lot of bag of worms can go into there, right? The way you look, the way you talk, the way you interact. There's this perception of what people think a coach looks like, but really, you're a problem solver. You're an educator. You're a person that understands nuance about biomechanics. They're your strengths to help someone out, rather than yelling, shouting, or the way you look as a person.
And that's where you find out from the individual that they didn't sleep well last night. And that's where you find out from the individual that they actually are struggling to get into the gym at the moment. And that's where you can give them that pat on the back, like, and say, well done for being here right now. And then pats on the back, they go a long way. They're quite incredible. Like when you get that kind of that peer pressure or that like pat on the back from someone like your coach, for example, you often see that that's what gets people in the next session.
Yeah, and that doesn't even have to be a coach. Like, we'll get into this later, but even just the fellow members as well. Like, we have a really good base of good friends in here. We see some people at the same time every day getting really close. They're giving each other those pat on the backs, encouraging each other to get in. And that's something that we're going to get into later with a couple of stats on how helpful it can be to train alongside somebody. But that's a good example of that as well. It doesn't always have to be the coach.
I think it's just something we should get into right now.
Let's go for really.
I just want to go. I'm going to delay that. Sorry. I've just been pondering for the last minute or two.
I didn't mean right now. I just meant
right now at a moment. So just like thinking like when we first started this, James, like 5-6 years ago or whatever it was, more than that, this wasn't around. And that's like it was a very unique idea when we first came with it. Well, within Australia at least. We were looking up to America and their kind of structures and their other kind of group training facilities, especially athlete orientated. And again, how we boiled that down for Australia, but it's so cool to see. Like, I reckon, like, pissing in our own pocket, I reckon we do it as best as it can be done. And I love what we do here at Benchmark, but there are other great facilities out there. We're seeing the rise of so many great facilities that are member orientated, using strength and conditioning principles and sports science to get the best out of their members. This wasn't happening 5-10 years ago. I don't know, maybe it was just my lack of knowledge. Bloody no facilities in Australia that were doing it. But now they're on the rise, and it's so cool to see, even though it's tiny, the industry slowly changing to be more member orientated and to be more strength conditioning orientated and to looking after individuals with proper methods and proper coaching. Cool to see that slowly changing.
It's like that the boutique gyms are on the rise pretty hard at the moment. And I feel like some people do it some people do it well, and then just some people do it extremely well. And I think we do it extremely well.
As our own pocket.
Yeah.
All right. So what we're about to get into, lads, before I went off.
Kind of the discussion of how, and we have spoken about this in other podcasts before, but it's the discussion of how members bring other members up. And how through like osmosis, through like just being next to someone who is achieving something, it will pick you back up. And we see it in certain kind of programs that we run through. We hear members say, well, a coach will say to them, "I've never seen you quite look like you were working that hard." And they will be like, "I just didn't want to let anyone down." It's like, oh, well, how fantastic is that? Well done. It's like the pressure of actually being put in a group sometimes can really bring out the best in people.
100%. You do have your overshooters as well. They kind of get anchored too high up and go outside their means. But for a large percentage of people, it is fan-freaking-tastic when you make those marginal increases and you lift your game up bit by bit.
Yeah, I think it's funny because one of the most hated exercises we've done has been a team bike effort on their cardio. And the reason it was so hated was because nobody wanted to let down their team. So they're actually working pretty hard on cardio day. So they all got the shits with that one. And that was going out of the programming because no one wanted to do it anymore.
But the interesting thing about that, right, is that we don't always want to be working at maximal intensity anyway. So it has a place, again, like everything, it has a place in its programming. Like you don't just, if you find something that makes people work to the absolute most, well, you use that every now and then and sporadically and rarely, right? You're probably not going to use it that often. But the rest of the time, you can start getting them to, like, you can find ways of making people like they'd like to work at their kind of 70, 80% where you can get a lot of progress from. And then you can push them again back into them kind of points where they're going to work maximally again and then pull them back out.
Yeah.
I think pretty, really when good. We went, we loved how hard they were working.
Yeah.
Maybe got a little bit too excited. Yeah. There's like, wow, we're really making the work here.
Yeah. Maybe went a bit too long on that
maybe
one.
Maybe we did.
We got plenty of feedback, right? What was that, like week 6 or 7 in?
Oh, yeah.
Please stop this. I can't do it anymore. My legs are dying.
But the numbers, they spoke for themselves. We really saw people push harder than they normally will. Yeah. And, They say that you are the average of your best friends, right? You're the average of your 5 friends. And in a gym setting, it's the same kind of thing. You are the average of, if you've got a group of 12, you are the average of them 12. And most people are going to get pulled up by that.
And let's say, for example, your community or your small circle around you might not have the best habits. Or what a great way to join or look at going into a new community where those habits already exist. Because if you start going to a new facility that has individuals that have those better habits or have been educated, guess what? You're going to get more benefit out of that by building friendships, being around that community, getting yourself invested. You will A, be changing your initial habits just by training more at this new facility, but B, you'll get anchored up by these other individuals, sharing their knowledge and their journey and anchoring you up with new and better behaviors as well.
And you say sharing their knowledge, and that's such an important point because as a coach, like, we can help you so much. We can explain things to you. Sometimes we have the good anecdotal evidence, or like we've been through it before ourselves, but there'll be lots of times that we haven't been through an experience that you've had, but you'll be in here with another member who has, and sometimes you'll just see these conversations between members where they start saying, I haven't been able to sleep because I have a stressful job like this and I work at this time. They go, well, I do this, and they're like, oh well. And the fact that they have that empathy towards you because they're in more of the same shoes to you than your coach is so rewarding. And it's A, it's more likely to let you give it a try because you're like, well, this person gets me, right? And because he's been for it himself. And B, probably is the better advice anyway. So being in a group where not just the coach is giving advice, but the members are, is so important. And I'll just say this again. It's like, how many times have I said something to someone to them to never register it? Like I've said that 100 times and then they go, oh, well, this member in the session said this. I'll be like, what? Like, and I'll be like, okay, just take it, James. And what you'll find is that's what clicked. That's the time that it clicked. And I'm a true believer that, like, as a coach, you say a lot, right? And lots of that information is never going to be taken in. If you've got people around them saying the same things over and over again, then eventually something's going to sink.
Yeah.
And it doesn't have to be you that gets it out there, as long as they get it.
Yeah, 100%. And they say teaching is the best way of learning as well. So even the members that are giving advice as well, they're learning from that too.
Most definitely. And James, you touched on like someone like with a stressful job and their mind's already very occupied with a lot of other things. One of the cool things about group training, you get to turn your mind off a little bit. You get just to follow a program. You don't have to pre-think out or outthink the training session. You just come in here, look what's on the board, pin back the ears, listen to what the structure or the intent of the day is, and execute. You'll have to still think a little bit about the feedback that's given to you and all that sorts of stuff, but you get to switch the mind off a little bit and be really present in the moment where someone's taking care of the structure and the program for you. And you know that you're going to get the best out of it if you follow that as well. So it's great for just switching the mind off a little bit, trusting what's up on the board and the intent and the structure from the coaches, and all you have to do is show up and just put the hard work in.
And you don't have to worry about being so self-conscious about what you're doing. We're all doing the same thing. You might be doing a slight variant of what we want you to do that day, but we're all doing the same thing together. It's kind of like it can be quite intimidating going into a big gym environment and following some sort of program to then be the only person in that gym doing that thing.
Yeah.
And like I'd say very rarely in a gym are eyes actually on you because most people are too busy staring at themselves in the mirror. But like it can feel that way. And in a group training gym, everyone's doing the same thing. We're all in it together. It can be a really nice experience.
That is definitely true. That is something I hear a lot of in terms of anxiety around starting gyms, the fear of all eyes on you. And especially with the setup of these commercial gyms as well, you'll notice that where the placement of the equipment as well, the squat racks are always in front of the mirror. So if you're there front and center, it feels like all eyes are on you. Granted, they're probably not. But even with the setup that we have with like the no mirrors and everything is spread out nice and even, everyone doing the same exercise, it's not as daunting or anxiety inducing doing those movements. And especially when you have at least two or three coaches around to help you out, you feel a lot more like a safe environment here.
I kind of picture it as someone walks in a gym and they picture everyone else in their heads going, you. But the truth is, as you walk in, you're doing that yourself, but you're saying me. And the truth is everyone in that gym is just like me.
Yeah.
You know, like everyone's really thinking about themselves more than they are thinking about other people.
Until you get that little breakthrough when someone is thinking about someone else, but in a positive way. And that is what I freaking love about this gym is when you get that point, it's like, hey man, I remember my first session. This is your second session. Trust it, man. You're going to be okay. Great work. You're doing really good. You're kicking butt, just keep going. I love hearing those conversations, especially from members you don't expect. They come outside of themselves for a moment to lift someone else up.
Yeah.
And that just makes me smile, man. I love that. Because it's intimidating. Those first couple of sessions, everyone else knows what to do. I don't know what to do. The coach is constantly telling me what to do. It's overloading. And just to have someone to go, hey, man, I've been there. I've done that. You're going to do well. Just steer the course, man.
Yeah, and that comes back to what James was saying about as well, about it being a bit more anecdotal from the members as opposed to us as coaches telling them it'll be okay. Like
definitely.
Getting that reassurance from a member who's gone through it.
Because
so
we're
better.
Here to say it's okay. Isn't
yeah,
it?
That's
like,
our job.
But when someone's doing that, they're truly doing it off their own back.
Yeah.
Yeah, and from that experience, right? They have been there before. Yeah.
Having that ability to switch. Okay, so we just said like having that ability to switch off to follow programming and have someone to give you a pat on the back and say, well done. That's great. The cool thing also about training, I know, I feel like we've done a bunch of the same movements for like the last 10, 15 years and I still love them. But having a bit of diversity with training, using different methods, different systems, it does keep training a little bit interesting for individuals. So not doing the same thing again and again and again and again and again. Like for example, like a high intensity class where it's just different variations of high intensity for 45 minutes, that can get a bit boring and you can, like James said earlier, you're going to meet that point where you can't get any more returns. Using different training methods that specialize in certain areas for a length of time, you know it's only 4 to 6 weeks of, you know, I'm really going hard on the strength and the program's going to change and things get a little bit more interesting because now we're working on a little bit more cardio or we're working on hypertrophy or whatever it happens to be. So it's really cool when the program chops and changes every couple of weeks because you're going to get a new stimulus. You're going to get a new change in environment. And that's a great way to keep training interesting. We're changing up the stimulus every couple of weeks or every couple of months because we need to for physiological changes, but B, it also keeps the coaches interested and the individuals training interested as well. Keeps it fun.
We do have a lot of our members say, like, what I really like about training here is how different it can be, like how often it changes. And the truth is we actually change little things often, right, rather than big things. Like really, we might run the exact same exercises for 8 weeks, which we did recently. But inside the 8 weeks, we were asking them to like get an extra set each week or increase the weight when they could. And these things, that's what makes it feel different each week. And the pat on the back there is themselves, right? They actually worked harder. Therefore, they know they're going to get some improvement because they're able to actually like move some heavier weight, like do some extra reps each set. And that kind of stuff is like, that's their own pat on the back being like, they track it and they see it improve. And that's what keeps bringing people back. And that's what makes them feel like this is actually quite different. Because again, like let's go into programming just a little bit. We kind of touched on circuit training that lots of gyms do because it's easy to use lots of equipment. It's easy to control a lot of members. With circuit training, you can quite often have like a TV up on the board. But if you just look at what we do here is we have a program on the board, but that program doesn't even mean that's what the session is going to be for that individual. Like really, you got to look at why you were doing something, not the exercise that you're doing. And I think so many gyms get captivated on the exercise. Like, how can I put this exercise in? Or I want to do these exercises. When really we're more like, okay, well, when we're running for a hypertrophy block, we have a reason why we're doing an exercise. We are doing a squat to grow the quads, right? Or we're doing a type of squat to grow the quads. So that if, for example, when we know that why in the background, if we have an individual in, we can have 12 members in that session and every single one can be doing a different exercise, but it's still resolving the why. They're still getting the end result. If it's strength, yeah, then we can have different exercises, but we just want to kind of keep it the same thing all the way through so they can build the strength in the exercise. And I think that's what really, really lacks in group training because it becomes circuit-based or it becomes exercise-based and it doesn't become the why in the background-based.
Yeah, exactly. Like I was here on Tuesday for a session. We were doing squats as the first movement. So you walk in and it says 1A. It says squat on the board. It doesn't say what kind of squat. I had 5 different variations of squat going on at once. And everyone knew what they were doing. Everyone was doing their own thing. You can adjust. You can take their own approach for each of them. But everyone is doing a personalized approach to exercise. It's not just here. This is what you're doing. You have to do it. This is how many reps. They know what they're doing themselves.
Yeah. And you're going to have like, 4 people front squatting, a couple of people safety bar squatting. You're going to have some people goblet squatting. You're going to have some people goblet squatting with a heel wedge.
Yeah,
it's like they're exactly all right. Completely different.
I had a Zercher in there as well. Like a bunch of everything.
But they're all getting the exact same result. And I think that's the magic in programming. It, you have to understand what you're trying to facilitate. And this is, again, I don't know if I'm going to explain extremely well, but that's what really gets me about other group training gyms because they're not shooting for a certain stimulus. They're shooting for a bunch of people just coming in to get tired.
Yeah.
And they may enjoy that, but we enjoy what we do. I think nearly every member comes in here and loves what they do when they come in here, even though they may be working hard. And they aren't going to get that kind of specific stimulus to themselves to actually see some improvement. I don't know if I've kind of...
The old bloody saying, I love regurgitating this one, any idiot can make another idiot tired. It's not hard to make someone buggered, right? Intensity is easy. You just go intensity and volume and you just turn those dials up and it doesn't matter who it is, they're going to be buggered in X amount of time. But to play with those dials correctly and have the right type of movements with the right type of rest and the right type of tempos and all that sort of stuff, that's where the magic happens when you know what you're doing and you know what you're shooting for. I love that we, before a cycle, like a cycle is like a length of time that we're going to be training for, and commonly anywhere from 4 to 6 weeks. And then like a whole program, we'll send out the program to the individual and we'll tell them what the next 12 to 16 weeks is going to be. And then a couple of days advance or a week in advance, we'll tell them what the cycle is going to be. So we're explaining to them exactly what we're shooting for. So every member's like, we're working on strength at the moment. And these are the days where certain things are happening. Oh, and they said in strength, these are the methods they're using. Oh, I don't really understand this, but I can ask them when I'm in. So we share exactly what the intent is, the methods we're using, and the structure, like what's happened on each day. So there's full transparency for everyone that's part of the team. So again, that's that cohesiveness of communication and intent along the whole membership. So everyone knows what the plan is. And then we can tweak the plan a little bit to be more personalized. So if someone is in a strength phase, but they need to work on more conditioning, guess what, man? We'll have a chat and I'll tell you where to plug the conditioning in to make it more effective for yourself.
And while that's transparency for the individuals you're training, well, that's what guides the coach's decision-making. And I think quite often there is no guide to the coach's decision-making. Mm. So as coaches, while all our members know the program, us as coaches, we know the program. So we know what exercise to change something to still get that beneficial stimulus going forward. And I feel like that's where things get lost out a lot in training, where there may be a program to follow, but because that program has no true backbone, and behind that program it is just a bunch of exercises, then the coach just gives someone a random other exercise instead.
Yeah, it doesn't match the intent of what we're trying to elicit at the moment.
So it's having the plan is so important, yeah. Right? The plan of programming is so important.
There's 101 ways to regress or progress a movement. If you're going to pick the right regression or progression, you want to match it with the right intent / the right level for that person at the same time. So we're getting the stimulus we need for for the goal that we're shooting for, and it's the right move for that person's needs for whatever reason it is. That's where the magic of coaching is.
And when it comes to, we talk about it being a team. Well, the cool thing about the training in here as well is one of the best times ever is when we test our strength, right? So we go through these different blocks and maybe we end up with a strength block at the end. And talking about like team effort, where like, for example, teams, when do they see the benefit of their training? Well, teams want to make sure, like, probably the prerequisite for a coach training a team is that they must meet their KPIs. They must achieve certain things, and that's going to show up most on the pitch. Well, in our job, we don't so much have, obviously, because we have a general population, we don't so much have the opportunity to see them improve on a pitch. Well, some of our members will come up to us and say, "Oh, I played on the weekend and I feel like I jumped the highest I've jumped. I ran the fastest I ran. I felt stronger on the ball," and so on. What we have in here is we have the ability to track things and see improvements through strength at the end of a block, like where we actually test, like we're going into it next week, right? We're going to do some lower body testing next week, and the week after we're going to do some upper body testing. And the idea is that everyone is going to see all the progress they've put in together. And this is where you see a lot of pats on the backs. You see claps, you see someone PB in front of 5-6 other people and get this massive round of applause. And it is the best.
It's good to see that.
It's the best feeling. Yeah. And it shows the hard work you've put in previously as well, which is so lovely to see. And I think that's what made CrossFit so popular as a group training gym, which we didn't really discuss, did we? And because what they did is they had the CrossFit games and they had the smaller variations of that, and they have that very competitive vibe with nearly everything they do.
Yeah, even like from a small level, like inner club competitions, and then they go local club competitions to regional to state, all that sort of stuff. They do really good on culture. It's the best thing. And it's honestly, I know it gets teased and memed a fair bit, but like culturally, they're a great template to follow and a big pat on the back to how they've structured that. It doesn't matter who you are. Everyone's like buys into that almost cultish mentality around CrossFit. And that's a beautiful place to be because that's accountability. That's a safe, fun place that you feel that you can constantly come back towards.
You could also say that on some side of it, like some of the boxes, they're called boxes. Some of the boxes, what they tend to do is they tend to do that too often. So they actually push the boundaries of competition too much to the point of people's kind of detriment, where they do fatigue a little bit too much, or accidents do happen, because I think CrossFit can be extremely notorious for kind of injuries, and there is reasons behind that.
Yeah, that's kind of where that their old memes and their kind of backbone builds from, is like injuries and using complex movements on underskilled individuals is probably the way to put it. And again, it's like we said earlier, right? Movements have to match the person and the intent at the current time.
A famous Olympic coach says it's training is a rule of thirds. And the kind of idea of that is that a third of the time you should feel really good, a third of the time you should feel okay, and then a third of the time you should feel absolutely exhausted.
Yeah.
And I think it's such a good rule to go by. And I think sometimes in training you'll find that people mess up that formula to the point where they just completely batter you all the time. You always feel exhausted, or you just undercut people where they never feel like they've really worked that hard. And that's the amazing kind of like that kind of the amazing recipe in training, is to make sure that people peak, recover, and get the stimulus.
All righty. What additional points, lads? Thinking here.
Well, based on what we've been talking about these benefits of exercise training, I think Mitch, you had a couple of great studies and different effects that have been looked into that actually give you some quantitative values onto just how good training alongside other people can be.
Cool. Well, one of these ones, I'll give you two straight up. So we didn't name the study, but we talked about the concept earlier on, about halfway through the potty. It's like the Kolar effect. And this is that one where someone is, I wouldn't say lower on the totem pole of fitness or strength in there, but they do get anchored up. They get regressed to the mean. Like, so seeing, like, if you're moving 10s and you've seen everyone else moving like 20s and that, you're like, oh, shit, maybe I should try the 12.5s, or maybe I should try a little bit more. And yes, it has to be safe and within your reach, but seeing everyone like move that little bit more is going to give you that little bit extra motivation to try and progress a little bit more. So there's some cool studies on seeing people like training with people that are just a little bit above them in their fitness or strength level. It's a great way for them to anchor themselves up and to challenge themselves a little bit more. And again, the coach in here will make sure they don't overreach, but will hopefully, if they're like keen for it, give them the pat on the back and the support they need to slowly progress and to get a little bit more load and stimulus on them. That's like a great way to get results.
I thought an interesting point in that was that they actually said that there was a kind of a sweet spot, like someone being like 1.4 times better than them, which is kind of like interesting, isn't it? Because there is that kind of like point where someone is maybe so far better than you.
It's discouraging. Happens,
it's discouraging. Yeah. And then there was obviously that point where they might just be so close to you that it doesn't really make you work that much harder, where you're kind of on even ground. So there's that kind of point where you want to find the right kind of level of competition. And I think in a group of 12 people, the cool thing about that is that most people can find that as well.
Yeah.
Like if you are paired with just one other person in small group training, you might find that that one person is either too far below or too high above that you can't truly get them gains from. And I think you often see it. Like we talk about that kind of osmosis. We often see it in the sessions where people do pair up with them kind of people who maybe like are that quite similar.
Yeah,
quite
that's close. Something I was going to touch on as well in that group sessions. If you are pairing up with someone, one where you get a lot is deadlifts. With like trap bars pairing up for deadlifts, you'll see people want to equally match each other in terms of weights. A, because it's easier to set up, but B, you can get a bit of a friendship going there as well. And also, because people do progress at different rates, what you're talking about there, if you can just be a little bit better and, hey, my partner's lifting this week, maybe I should try and take a step up. And obviously, if the coach approves and it's all safe and all that, then that is pushing you to just do that a little bit more just by practicing in that pair.
In this study, they were measuring like people training with each other and people training together and of that similar training gap, it's about a 24% improvement with plank time. So take that as you will, but like 24% is a pretty large percentage increase to have just be doing lying next to someone, someone next to you, just having one person next to you, 24%, it's pretty ridiculous.
And the cool thing about plank is you kind of think, when you think of planks, it's really mental power.
Yeah, you don't want to break.
Most people can hold it for longer periods of time, but they just can't mentally want to do it. So just them having them eyes on you, having that like that peer pressure can be the win. Right? Someone watching, like, if you fail, I'm going to think lesser of you.
Yeah.
Therefore, work harder. Can be quite amazing.
There was this another one. I forget what the study's called. I'll open it up in a sec. This one was an aerobic type of study where you had different groups, like people training together and people by themselves. And they're given like a left to right of arc to do on their aerobic program. And individuals that were partnered up were more likely to stay on the bike for a longer period of time versus those that didn't. Still same outputs, like same, like they're not, one's not going faster or slower. The individuals that are paired up were more likely to stay on the bike longer. I think it was by an extra 2 or 3 minutes than their counterparts. So having someone just there next to you going, oh crap, they're working, I'm not getting off until they get off, or maybe just to talk shit with and to have a bit of banter and build up a friendship. Like just to get that extra little bit of effort in is, again, that little mental win, right? Having someone next to you to work off against.
And it's pretty amazing that, but I do think this can go the wrong way as well, because you're always going to have people who are picked up more by kind of motivation and competition. And then you're going to have other people who do kind of hide away from competition as well. As always in group training, it's extremely important. Like that's why you can kind of see that different gyms survive by getting different types of people in. And you can kind of look at how CrossFit definitely has a percentage of the certain personality involved in it. And in this gym, like we get all different types of people, and you find that some people just don't like that. Well, it's not that they don't like competition, but they just don't like it enforced on them at certain points in time. And it kind of actually puts them back in their hole. So it's extremely important that you kind of like, you don't just go at someone to try and, you can't just think that saying to someone, oh, you need to lift heavier, is going to actually help them lift heavier.
And that's where education and talking to them about just them slowly progressing and tracking is a nice way to get them to do the same thing, but less externally driven and more internally driven.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. There's one last one here I kind of had up, and this was like a survey. It's like a journal, the Journal of Obesity. And this was like looking through a weight loss lens and a mental health lens. And they had like three populations. They had like a group training one, like where they had to go to a group training class. The next one was like training by yourself, and the last one was people that didn't train, just walked or cycled or whatever to work. And they were doing a mental health survey, they're doing a physical survey, and there was one more, like a performance maybe survey, I can't remember off the top of my head. But anyway, all metrics by like about 20% were increased on the group training one. Mental health was increasing because they had a sense of community and people to get along with. they'll work in a bit harder and they'll go in more consistently with their physical changes. So reports in the survey were all higher there as well. And I already forgot the last one, but all three metrics were improved by like 20, 25%. So it was like bloody huge. And that's just a 12-week study. So not pretty easy and a quick snapshot to look at of about 100 people.
So gains are improved by 25% just by being in a group rather than on your own.
Not bad. Yeah,
there you go. And I was looking at one as well that wasn't even looking at the gains specifically, but more so the frequency and just looking at people that trained in groups versus people that trained individually. You'd find that the people that trained in the groups were much more likely to have a higher frequency of actually visiting the gym. So obviously that brings with it the health gains from the higher frequency, but just not in the gains itself. That's not where it all lies. You can get in there easier, get higher frequency in by training in groups.
It's kind of interesting at the moment how it's so well known now that when we talk about health, it's kind of got that biopsychosocial model of everything. And we kind of talk about how obviously biology is done, sorted if you get into the gym. Like so many things are changed for the positive when you're training. And then at the same time, you're getting that social side of things, which is going to affect that psychology side. And because it is kind of like a triangle where one improves, the others improve off the back of it. You're like getting into a group training gym pretty much ticks all them things off the list. It's interesting how like with GPs, for example, where with so many GPs, you go to the doctor and they're now getting really, they're really understanding that they need to prescribe some exercise to this person. Like it's like walking. There's even in certain like types of groups that they involve them in now to get them training again. But it's kind of like it's a shame that there's not like a big group where they get people into more involved, right? Where it's kind of like, well, these are 10 other people that I've spoken to in the last week that have the same issue. You should meet them, you know, because I think that would be a really powerful tool. You speak about people who do things like the run club, or they go out running. People know intuitively that they work harder with friends.
Yeah.
So you ever gone for a run for like a 5K run and just had two people with you? You don't even notice you're working that much harder. It's pretty incredible.
Yeah, and that's definitely touching back on that anecdotal thing that we were talking about before, whereas if that GP could refer you to a class of 10 people going through a similar situation that need a similar treatment, that would make you a lot more comfortable in that environment and maybe even make you work harder because you know it's not just the coach telling you to work harder, but you're also surrounded by a bunch of people who are also benefiting from that.
So too. Win, 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 win.
There you go. Run's a winner in that situation.
That old saying, strength in numbers, right?
Yeah.
Applies on a deeper level here as well.
Yeah.
Anything else, lads?
For me, that's it, I think.
That was beautiful.
I think you got about everything.
Like, yeah, for group training. Thank you for listening, guys. We look forward to the next week and have a great week.
Nice. Thank you.
Thanks, guys.